Hello and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason, and with me as usual is Rich. Hello, Rich.
What's going on, Jason?
Not a whole lot. You know, I'm just thinking about things that I have done for an extremely long time, like this podcast. We have done this podcast for, gosh, going on 5 years now?
Is it really? Holy crap.
That sounds about right.
Wow.
Yeah. Is that true? Someone will check that.
I don't know if that's true. We'll go with it. I like it. It's got a nice ring to it. So, yeah. So.
Yeah. Maybe 4 years. But either way, it's been a, you know, it feels like 5 years. For, if that's good or not, I don't know.
I'm so sorry. I didn't know that was such a drain on your life, Jason. I'm sorry. I'll just,
you know, I'll see myself out of my life.
I'll just see myself out then.
All right. I guess that podcast is done. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, so great episode. Yeah, good stuff. Yeah. So talk about the Spotify or whatever. We're on Spotify. Yeah. Go there.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Leave us a review. No. Yeah. So we are. That's a fun segue into. we're going to talk about the longest tenures that any NBA player has had with one franchise. And we're going to talk about guys who spent their entire career with a franchise, guys who were on one team for an extremely long time and then just danced around with it, you know, got divorced and just, you know, fluttered about with a bunch of other teams, you know, toward the end of their career. Some interesting discussion, I believe, will come out of this. And this was, you know, sparked by a momentous event in NBA history.
Yeah, and that's, you know, this offseason, Dirk Nowitzki officially signed a one-year deal to remain with the Dallas Mavericks. So barring, you know, any sort of catastrophe during preseason, that he will play his 21st season with the Mavericks, which will be the most all-time for a player with one franchise. And then also barring him just randomly deciding to, like, join the Grizzlies or something next year, that will, and he seems to indicate that this is it, and this is his last year, and this is his final year with the Mavericks. So this will be it for Dirk. But yeah, this will break the record then for 21 years. Also start out with Dirk, of course, with one franchise, so 21 years with the Mavericks. At this point, he's the franchise leader in games, minutes played, field goals, field goal attempts, three-pointers, free throws, offensive rebounds, defensive rebounds, blocks, points, PR, win shares, and valuable replacement players. So yeah, Dirk definitely sets the standards for the Dallas Mavericks franchise and will go down, and it'll be very difficult for anybody to eclipse what Dirk has done with the Dallas Mavericks. I don't know if it'll ever be done. It'll take another insanely monumental season or monumental career to even touch what Dirk has done with the Mavericks. Of course, getting them to their first, you know, prolonged amount of you know success, first prolonged amount of playoff success, and obviously a championship. I mean, that's Dirk's just the Dallas Mavericks. I mean, he's synonymous with the Dallas Mavericks now.
Absolutely, yeah. Right, and he was, you know, when he came to the franchise, I mean, they'd obviously had some really good players. You know, they had Derek Harper, obviously, mm-hmm. You know, Mark Aguirre. They had, you know, some really good players in the 80s and 90s. But there was absolutely an opportunity for someone to come in and cement themselves as the great player of the franchise. And it is highly, highly, highly unlikely that anyone is ever going to be able to eclipse what he's done for that team. I mean, I think he's pretty much he is the Mavericks icon, and there's pretty much no knocking him off the perch, barring, you know, something exceptional happening. So
yeah, and the thing that was kind of interesting about him too is it was tough to find any even instance where it was like Dirk was maybe going to leave or it was rumored in trades or whatnot. It felt like pretty much from like 2005 he was pretty much locked into that team, and it was never ever going to really change. And obviously the success and the MVPs and the championship and stuff kind of locked him in for good. But yeah, it was tough to find any sort of example of Dirk, you know, maybe not being there for the long haul, or, you know, even after his rookie year where there were some up and downs or whatnot, it seemed like they were pretty confident in sticking with him. So yeah, he's unique in this. We're going to talk about some guys here and there that did, you know, there were rumors possibly of them moving on and doing other places, but it was nearly impossible to find anything of Dirk other than just unsubstantiated rumors of Dirk going anywhere else. It's almost been no contest that he was just going to go to the Mavericks every single year.
Sure. Yeah, I just want to mention that Dirk and presumably Vince Carter, again, as long as there's no shenanigans during training camp, will become the next two players to play 21 seasons in the league, joining Robert Parrish, Kevin Willis, and Kevin Garnett. And of course, all of those players have played for several teams, including Willis has played for 8 teams, and Carter will be joining his 8 teams when he plays for the Hawks.
I forgot he's with the Hawks. God damn it.
Hey, now let's.
Well,
let's
not... I mean, come on. You play the strings out in Atlanta with the Hawks. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're in the Kings. I mean, come on.
You're right. Okay.
There's a little more to do than that. All
that
right.
That is the Atlanta Hawks slogan this year is, hey, at least it's not the Kings.
Better
right?
than the Kings?
Hey,
yeah. The Kings. Yeah. More dignity than the Kings. I think that's
right.
Great.
Yeah. Oh,
yes.
Yeah. I like that. The dignity and put a little crown on the D there. That'd be pretty good.
There you go.
The Hawks
good.
Just to troll the Sacramento Kings for no reason whatsoever.
Yes.
Our next guy here, just 1 year off from Dirk. This will be the guy that Dirk is beating the record for, is Kobe Bryant. So a lot of recent guys in history. Kobe Bryant, of course, with the Los Angeles Lakers. He's a franchise leader in games, minutes played, field goals, three-pointers, free throws, steals, points, uses percentage, of course, and win shares. But yeah, Kobe was an interesting case because there was a time, 2006, 2007, 2008, where it looked like he might be on the way out. And there's the famous, trade rumor and the trade request that Kobe made. So there is a real possibility that Kobe would not have been able to get, another 10 years that he did with the Lakers. But other than that, weird moment in the trade request, in the mid-2000s, pretty much he had been a Laker then almost after the success had come back with Paul Gasol and Lamar Odom and they won their titles or whatever, felt like Kobe was just going to stay there forever then. But yeah, it there was a time where Kobe, was really rumored to go on there and apparently, according to him, made a pretty strong trade request to leave the Lakers. It would have been interesting to see how history would have played that out if he were to leave.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there was video of him, going and saying basically, trade Andrew Bonham, trade his ass, I believe was the phrase for Jason Kidd. So, yeah, so that was very, it's kind of been glossed over a little bit because, of course, they got Gasol and had the success they had at the end of the decade. But yeah, I mean, that was definitely looked like that was going to, end very poorly. And he wasn't going to necessarily be with the Lakers for his entire career. But, it worked out very well, both in basketball terms and especially in, financial terms, for lack of a better way to put it. Interesting that Dirk and Kobe both were not drafted by their original teams.
Right.
Dirk drafted by the Bucks and Kobe drafted by the Hornets. So there's no one as someone still has the opportunity to be drafted by their original team and stay with their original team for more than 20 seasons. If someone wants to take that challenge, maybe at some point that'll happen. But
Mike Conley, we're looking your way. We're going to talk about Mike Conley here in a little bit. It's
there you
unbelievable
go.
That
yeah.
we're talking about Mike Conley, but we are going to talk about Mike Conley later. So
Dennis Haslam, I think, obviously. Well, he wasn't drafted, so I guess that doesn't count. But
darn! Well,
maybe he could. Maybe he could last six more years. That's possible.
Please, dear God, no. All right. So next on our list, John Stockton here. 19th season with the Utah Jazz, just one away from Jason's record, as you mentioned there a little bit. Stockton's an interesting case because his draft was, 1984, the very famous 1984 draft. He was not a really resounding. I mean, people really didn't love that they drafted him in Utah. There's a newspaper report from June 19th, 1984 that talks about the fact that the Jazz, they gathered a bunch of fans at the Salt Palace for the draft party, and they announced Gonzaga guard, John Stockton. And then this quote says there was no boos, no cheers, nothing. Nobody knew what to make of this guy. Nobody was really upset, but nobody was happy. It just felt like, John Stockton, really? And what's funny is there was I don't know the name in front of me, but there was a Gonzaga teammate that everybody wanted more than John Stockton. And for some reason, everybody was kind of perplexed that the Jazz and other teams picked, or were on Stockton and not this other Gonzaga teammate. But it's pretty interesting to see how the no beers, no booze, no cheers, nothing ended up with a 19 career and a legendary career with Utah Jazz for John Stockton.
Yeah, and that's, he did so much for the team, obviously, along with Karl Malone, who, almost made this list as well. Obviously,
we'll talk about the longevity part.
Yeah, we'll talk about that coming up. But yeah, he, I didn't realize that the announcements, that he got that reaction from, the draft. And yeah, it's kind of a weird one because, the fact that it was nothing, the fact that it was just that people didn't know what to make of it. It wasn't like they were actively booing this guy or, maybe it was a little bit of a different attitude with fans back then. And probably, obviously, Gonzaga not as well known as it is today as a basketball school. But yeah, that's sort of a strange one. And there really was never a time, again, where Stockton, even had any kind of even thought about leaving, really. I mean, even in 96, he said, I'm not leaving Utah, and he says he's staying there. He likes it there. He says, if that turns around and bites me, that's the way it goes. He doesn't want to, just wanted to stay there, was happy there, was comfort there. And that's cool, I think. I mean, like, I don't think team players should be obligated in any way to stay with the team that drafted them if they have other situations and want to go someplace else or, you know, or whatever. But I do think it's cool when the situation works out for both the player and the team for them to be able to be there for their entire career. I mean, it is a relatively, you know, rare thing for it to, you know, happen, you know, more than 15 plus years. There's only a handful of guys on this list who are able to, you know, spend that much time with the team or even more so spend, you know, their entire career on one franchise, so that means a lot.
Yeah, it does, and it's cool too, because we're gonna, you know, a lot of the names we're gonna talk about here, obviously, for playing in the league as many years as they do, they're gonna be, you know, top tier players. But these guys are, the guys we're gonna talk about are almost iconic with those franchises. Dirk is synonymous with the Mavericks, and that's cool that, you know, there's that way. John Stockton is synonymous with the Jazz, and in a lot of ways, and we'll talk about a few other guys here a little bit who are just synonymous with these franchises for staying there so long. And yeah, you know, I'm all for players doing whatever they can to get the most money and maximize their value or whatever. But if a guy is totally cool with just saying, hey, you know what, I'll sign there because this is comfortable for me, I like it here, everything's doing well, and it doesn't, as you know, Stockton says, and this is 1996, he says, well, if it bites me in the ass, you know, what it, you know, so what, you know, that is what it is. But then they go to, you know, two straight NBA finals, so it's actually the opposite. It ends up being his most successful a few years as well. But I thought it was kind of funny too, is that Stockton did not have an agent as well. He had David Falk initially, who was obviously the super agent of the time, David Falk, and Stockton just, you know, let him go and just kind of negotiated on his own from that on. It was like, nah, I don't need it, it's fine, it's cool. You know, like, you know, he says in one quote, you know, it'd be kind of a joke for me to say, yeah, I'm gonna check my options. I'm not. To me, that's lying. For me to say I'd go play somewhere else would be a lie, so why do it? So it's kind of interesting there that he just never did it. And also in 1996, he agreed to a deal that made salary cap space available so the team could improve, and obviously they did improve the next two seasons. In exchange, though, hard negotiator John Stockton insisted that Delta Center ice time be made for his son's hockey team, though. So, you know, really, John Stockton swinging a big stick there. You know, you're gonna pay driving me hard, but gosh darn it, you're gonna give ice time to my son's hockey team. So,
yeah.
He probably also said gosh darn it too, which is the good part as well.
He probably did. He probably did, yeah.
As far as Stockton, franchise leader in games, three-pointers, assists, steals, offensive win shares, and win shares per 48 for John Stockton on the Jazz. So we'll move on now to 19 seasons as well. This is Tim Duncan, San Antonio Spurs, of course. Really hope he could have made it to 20. That would have been pretty fun. He would have also got a record, but alas, it did not happen. Of course, with Tim Duncan, the famous thing is in 2000, he almost left. The quotes from Tim Duncan is he said, you know, point blank, I came real close to leaving. You know, I came close to leaving real close. There, of course, was the goal to form a super team in Orlando with Tim Duncan, Grant Hill, and Tracy McGrady. Coach Doc Rivers famously had a rule where significant others could not be on the planes. And that was the rumored deal breaker for Duncan and his family. So immediately after that, when Duncan kind of had cold feet about this situation, was then sort of thinking of his other options. David Robinson, who was vacationing in Hawaii, cut that short, met up with Greg Popovich. They go to the Virgin Islands, and then they convince Tim Duncan, I should say, to stay with the San Antonio Spurs. And that was probably a good pick, because then, of course, he makes 19 seasons with the Spurs, becomes the franchise leader in games, minutes played, field goals, offensive rebounds, defensive rebounds, blocks, points, offensive win shares, defensive win shares, value over replacement player, basically everything. You know, Tim Duncan becomes the Spurs in a lot of ways. But yeah, it would have been fascinating to see after 3 or 4 years, Tim Duncan just bouncing and going to Orlando. Like, it's just amazing to figure out or try to understand maybe what his, you know, what would the career of Tim Duncan be if he didn't have the sort of identity that he has with the Spurs, and if he didn't have the success with the Spurs? Obviously, he would have already won a title with them, but then going to Orlando and doing whatever it was there that those guys would do, just fascinating to think of how different his career would be, you know, sort of perceived.
Yeah, and how successful the Magic would have been with those three guys. I mean, obviously, Hill would have dealt with all his injuries, but Duncan and McGrady would still have been a great pair together. But that there, yeah, so many what ifs on that, and whether, you know, he would have been able to, obviously he wouldn't have had 20 years, but he would have had, you know, maybe like 15, 16 years with the Magic, and that's still a pretty impressive run, you know, wondering how much this they would have been able to have. And yeah, lots of things there probably turned out better the way that it turned out. Obviously, you know, Duncan winning 4 championships in addition to the first one that he'd won in 99 with the Spurs, and, you know, all the great accomplishments that he had there. And, you know, again, basically, you know, Robinson was really the icon of the team, I guess George Griffin before that, but immediately Duncan pretty much, you know, put his mark on that. It is, I think, definitely the first person people think of when they think of the Spurs.
Yes, definitely not Kawhi Leonard. Maybe right now they think
but
later, yeah, not so much. Move on now to Reggie Miller and the Indiana Pacers, of course. Reggie Miller does 18 seasons with the Pacers, but famously was courted by the Knicks in 1996. And there's some interesting ideas about that courting, if it was Reggie Miller just kind of using the Knicks as leverage to get more money from the Pacers, if there was real interest in there. Miller's agent, who, I mean, of course, maybe not the most impartial judge here, but Arne Tellem said that Reggie's interest in the Knicks is sincere. This is a quote from the time. It says, Reggie's interest in the Knicks is sincere, and if the Knicks are sincere, there's a good chance we could work something out. I don't know what the Knicks will offer or what the Pistons will offer. We'll find out probably on Tuesday. And of course, as I mentioned, there's sort of that weird idea if there was going to be leverage. Is he just trying to get more money from Indiana? There was rumors at the time, if you read articles, that they were between two guys in the Knicks. They were between Allen Houston and Reggie Miller. They, of course, chose Allen Houston, which at the time makes, I think, makes pretty good sense. Allen Houston on the rise. And Allen Houston had some great years with the Knicks as well. And Reggie, you know, was still solid and would still have quite a few more years under his belt. But yeah, I'm okay with the idea of choosing Allen Houston over Reggie Miller. But yeah, where do you stand on the Reggie Miller to the Knicks thing in 1996? Was it a real thing? What would that have been like? Either that just feels icky.
That's really, really hard to imagine, because, you know, I mean, a lot of people feel that way about Durant going to Golden State, you know, from Oklahoma City, because they were, you know, playoff rivals and so forth. But yeah, I mean, it was a lot more personal with the Pacers and Knicks, and obviously that was added to later on in the 90s as well. It had already started, but it was, you know, far from concluding. You know, they played 4 or 5 years in a row in the playoffs. So, I don't know. I mean, I think that I can see at the time picking Houston over Reggie, because Houston was younger and, you know, had maybe looked like he might be more of a star. But I don't know. I think Miller was he's obviously the better player at the time. And, you know, if you can get a guy like that, and get a guy who delivers in like big moments like that, and, do that, I think that would have it's just, you're right, it is really weird to think about, though. It's really remarkably hard.
I just like thinking of Reggie in Knicks jersey, like high-fiving Spike Lee. It's just like, no, that's a nap at all.
But who would have known that Reggie would still be, you know, pretty good in like 04 and 05,
right?
Like,
yeah, I would have never that long. That.
Yeah, you would think maybe he would have like 4, you know, good years left, but yeah, he had like 8 good years left, so yeah.
And of course, Reggie Miller, franchise leader in games, minutes played, field goals, three pointers, free throws, assists, steals, points, offensive win shares, defensive win shares altogether, valuable replacement players. So he's definitely pretty good. He is not, though, the Pacers' all-time leader in win shares per 48. That is, as everybody would guess, Brad Miller, of course.
Yes.
You know, Pacers legend,
Brad Miller. Gotta be Miller.
of course.
Right.
I was barely even going to mention that, because you all know that at home, and Jason, I know you know that off the top of your head.
Sure.
That Brad Miller is the Indiana Pacers, you know, win shares per 48 leader. But just thought I'd mention for the few folks out there that don't remember that. So,
yeah.
Move on now to one that's still present, sort of, kind of, Manu Ginobili with the San Antonio Spurs. He is entering his 16th season. Him, interestingly enough, in 2016 offseason, the Sixers, a lot of people remember this as well, made a huge offer to Ginobili, who was 38 at the time, a big offer. They guaranteed him a 2-year deal that would have been with the first year between $16 and $17 million. He ended up taking a much reduced deal to stick with the Spurs, but it would have been fascinating to see Manu Ginobili with kind of the not quite up and coming. They were sort of kind of on the cusp of it a little bit with the Sixers. Like, you could feel it was on the way there with the Sixers. Obviously, this would not be, you know, until next year when we really saw them emerge to the level that they did. But fascinating to think of Manu Ginobili yucking it up with like the baby Sixers and Joel Embiid and all that sort of stuff. It just seems kind of interesting that he would do that. But what are your thoughts on Manu almost going to the Sixers?
Yeah, that would have been that would have made them even, I think, more fun. Although they were, you know, that would have been more fun if he'd have gotten there this year with that team, because that team was kind of enjoyable, and obviously they're emerging and all of that. But it's going to be similar, and we'll probably deal with it a little bit with Tony Parker going to the Hornets. I mean, that's just going to feel like a completely like odd, strange thing. And I think Ginobili being on another franchise as well, it is going to just be that one's going to be hard to process a little bit. So I think even though I like, there's part of me could imagine actually being fun, especially with Ginobili being on the Sixers themselves and, you know, mixing with those personalities and with that style and everything, and, you know, throwing great passes to Embiid or, you know, Ben Simmons or whatever. But But yeah, it's I think I have enough sentimentality that I'm happy to see him on the Spurs.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, he's 16 years right now. As you said, he got drafted in 1999, did not come to the NBA until 2002. I don't think he's going to reach 20 years. That would be looking kind of bleak there for old Manu. So yeah, I don't think he's got four more years. But we'll see. I don't think so though. Move on now to John Havlicek for the Boston Celtics. Of course, this is 1962 to 1978, so 16 straight years with the Celtics. Franchise leader in games, minutes played, field goals, and points. Most of the counting stats, you know, you'll see John Havlicek up near the leaderboards for Celtics all the time, but very few of the value and advanced stats. Those are occupied by guys we're going to talk about here in a little bit. But yeah, what do you make of John Havlicek and where he sort of ranks with the Boston Celtics all time in terms of those games played? And obviously having the most of any Celtic as well, most consecutive years or most overall years with the Celtics, I should say.
Right. It's interesting, Havlicek, because I think, like, when he retired, he had a very vaulted place in Celtics and NBA history. I mean, there was that retirement tour that celebrated his career. He had played more games than anybody in NBA history. I think he was in the top five or definitely in the top 10 in, you know, points scored and all that. And as you mentioned, yeah, it was more, a lot of it was accumulation more than efficiency. Although I think just the years that he kind of played and some of the strengths that he actually has, I think he's better than maybe some of that says he is. But I think he gets a little bit lost in the Boston Celtics shuffle. They have so many iconic players that he's behind Russell, he's behind Bird, and he's sort of sandwiched between those two. I mean, he's obviously part of that '60s era, and he's right before that '80s era where he's sort of maybe his best years were those 70s teams that were really great, but somehow get lost in the shuffle because of all the other great Celtics teams. So if he had played for just about any other franchise other than the Lakers and the Celtics, I think he'd be the most important player in that team's history. But because he played for the Celtics and they have so many important players and a little bit because of the time that he played and also that he didn't have the most captivating personality and also that he didn't really stay with the game after he retired, all those things I think have made him less valued or appreciated or remembered than maybe I think that he deserves.
Absolutely. You mentioned this guy a little bit earlier, Udonis Haslem, 15 seasons right now with the Heat. Went undrafted, so I don't know how we're going to clarify him there a little bit. But Udonis Haslem, franchise leader in offensive rebounds and defensive rebounds. That's it, and I don't think he's probably going to collect any more. Maybe all-time games and stuff you can sort of contend with, but he also has to get into these games for that to count. And I don't know. Udonis Haslem, what? It's hard to believe it's been 15 years of Udonis Haslem in the Heat, and he's seen so much too with that franchise. I mean, think about that, like 2003 to now. I mean, that's like the end of the morning era, the Dwayne Wade and Shaq era. He sees the Big Three era. He sees the James Johnson era. You know, like that's just the different things, and it's all the constant is Udonis Haslem. It's just it's pretty amazing.
It is, yeah. He's the first non Hall of Famer on this list. Really, you have to go down pretty far before you get to. Well, I guess there's one other one who's not a Hall of Famer that we'll get to. But yeah, it's interesting that right now we have two of those guys who are very much like for whatever reason they stuck around with those teams, were part of those cultures, even though they were good basketball players at their peaks,
sure. Yeah,
but
yeah.
They just more just have been around there and have just kind of stuck around there for rather than. Before those two, everyone else who had played 15 more years with the team was a bona fide Hall of Famer, one of the best players in their franchise's history.
Yeah. And then, there's a guy here in a little bit that we'll talk about for sure that definitely sticks out like a sore thumb. But this man does not. Dolph Schayes with the Syracuse Nationals, Philadelphia 76ers. He goes 15 years with that franchise. Of course, they move along the way, but still with the same franchise there. Drafted by the New York Knicks, though, which is interesting as well, in 1948. Opts to play for the Nationals in the NBL. And then, of course, the Nationals moved to the NBL or moved to the NBA in 1949. So different stuff there.
Franchise merger, yeah.
Yeah, and Dolph Schayes is a franchise leader in free throws, total rebounds, offensive win shares, defensive win shares, and win shares. So I ask, does that surprise you a little bit, given that the Syracuse Nationals, the 76ers, have a really storied franchise history? I mean, a lot of really great players. We're going to mention them quite a few times, including the next guy we're going to talk about. Does it surprise you that Dolph Schayes would be so high on the list for some of those?
I mean, only because I've looked into it a little bit and know a bit of history. I mean, I think the thing with the Sixers' best players is that they didn't necessarily have a lot of longevity with the franchise. I mean, Iverson obviously, you know, moved on after, you know, 9 or 10 years. You know, Irving, you know, his first 5 years were in the ABA, so he had, you know, 11 or so years with them. You know, Wilt only had a relatively short stint with the Sixers. So, you know, they've had a lot of great players during the time. Moses Malone, he was there 4 or 5 years. So, but most of their, you know, truly great best players, you know, don't quite have the longevity with the franchise that, you know, Shays and Greer have.
Yeah, and that brings us right to our next one. It's Hal Greer there with 15 years as well with the Syracuse Nationals, Philadelphia 76ers. He's the franchise leader in games, minutes played, field goals, and points. So he kind of fills out some of those other ones that Dolph Shays doesn't have. And I think, again, speaks to your point that, yeah, these guys might not always come, you know, one and two when you mention the best players in that franchise's history, but they were there for so long that some of these stats, particularly accumulating win shares, accumulating games, minutes played, field goals, points, and that sort of stuff, will go to them a little bit more than it would a guy like a Wilt, a guy like an Allen Iverson, even a guy like a Julius Erving, who we're going to talk about in a bit. But, yeah, so Hal Greer, of course, leads in those ones there. And definitely, yeah, very similar to Dolph Shays in that sense, where he plays 15 years with the franchise, establishes a long career and a long tenure with that franchise. But yeah, pretty interesting to see Hal Greer up towards the top of this list as well.
Yeah, and Greer, you know, he's a guy who has, you know, half a dozen or so, you know, second team All-NBA players. I mean, he was absolutely Hall of Famer, absolutely, you know, great in his day. And Shays was, you know, was one of the better, you know, probably top five player during, you know, most of his career. I mean, he was definitely a guy who, you know, if you think about the contributions to the franchise and longevity, if you add up all the case for him over, you know, even some of the other great players the Sixers have had, I think you could make a case that he's one or two in terms of, you know, best, most important player in the franchise history. Of course, you know, how we like to discuss it, given, you know, the context of their times versus, you know, how they would fare now or whatever, anything like that.
And now we move on to the next guy who, as you mentioned a little bit earlier, kind of in the Udonis Haslam, but I think less like maybe less of a contributor than Udonis Haslam even. Nick Collison from the Seattle Supersonics / Oklahoma City Thunder. Yes, he started with the Supersonics and is still hanging around here. Drafted by in 2003. He missed the entire season, though. His rookie season then came into the league. But he was 14 years with that franchise. I believe he finally now has ended that. I think the Nick Collison experience is over. We'll see if he ends up getting re-signed or whatnot. But he leads the franchise in absolutely nothing. Nothing at all.
Yeah, I think Collison did officially retire, and I believe there's Haslam is negotiating for a return. So Haslam will continue, but Collison will be no longer. Yeah, I think he and Durant are the only. I think it might be Collison, Durant, and I think he may be retired now, but Gerald Wilkins. I believe those are the three remaining players who played for the Sonics in the NBA, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh yeah, I think that is true. Yeah, and we lose Collison now. Yeah, I think you're right. We did talk about that on an episode about a year or so ago, which stinks. We need to keep the Sonics alive, but Durant will luckily sure keep it on for quite a while. But
right,
yeah, we always have him. Yeah, now that Collison has dropped out. But yeah, we did talk about that. I want to clarify if that is the exact number, but I believe that is true. So
yeah. Damien Wilkins. I think it's a Gerald Wilkins, but I'm Damien Wilkins.
Well, so. I like the idea of Gerald Wilkins still playing in the NBA. It's like, hey, he might be 60, but he might be like 58 years old, but gosh darn it, Gerald gives you a good effort every single time out there. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I like the idea of Gerald Wilkins. that's incredible. Move on now. 14 years as well for Elgin Baylor with the Minneapolis and Los Angeles Lakers. He is the franchise leader in total rebounds and points per game. Not a ton for Elgin Baylor, but yeah, pretty interesting there for 14 years for the Lakers. He is our highest ranking Lakers so far. We'll talk about another one here right after Elgin. But Elgin Baylor with 14 years with the franchise. Actually, tied. We'll move on to the next guy. I think it's pretty relevant to do that as well. With Jerry West, who also has 14 years with the Lakers. Their timeline just about matches up. There's a few years here and there where they don't quite match up. But this I thought was more fascinating, even more so than Elgin. I'll let you chime in on Elgin if you want. But I thought this one really caught me by surprise. Jerry West, 14 years with the Lakers, tied for the most overall with that franchise, only leads the franchise in offensive win shares. That is it. Does it feel like he should have more? Yeah. Does it feel like he should be more significant? Like, because he feels very significant with the Lakers, but that's it. Offensive win shares is all it has. Does that say more about the Lakers franchise, or what does it say about Jerry West? I don't know. I just found that kind of perplexing.
Yeah, I think it says more about the Lakers, because, you know, obviously Kareem was there 15 years and he has most of the offensive records, I would imagine. I mean, well, Kobe's passed, of course, a lot of them, but Kareem had them for a long time. You know, you have Magic for assists, I think it's just, again, it's all the great players that were there. And West, unlike, you know, somebody like Havlicek, I don't think he gets lost in the shuffle as much. I mean, I think he's kind of appreciated for, you know, being the great player that he was at the time. You know, winning the finals MVP, I think, was helpful. And I think even more helpful is just staying around in the game, and his success as an executive has kept his memory as a player alive. But yeah, it slightly surprises me, I guess. But you know, when you think about who's been there, then it's not terribly surprising.
Move on to another 14-year career as well. Joe Dumars, the Detroit Pistons, 1985 to 1999. I always forget he was hanging around until 1999 for Joe Dumars. But franchise leader in games, three-pointers, and offensive win shares. He seems like he lasted even longer because he also just kind of moved very easily into the kind of the GM and the front office role. But yeah, 14 years for Joe Dumars, leads in games, three-pointers, and offensive win shares, and probably will lead in those for quite a while because Detroit seems to have trouble keeping any sort of semblance of anything going in that franchise. But yeah, Joe Dumars, 14 years. Any thoughts on Joe Dumars and his tenure with the Pistons?
Yeah, I mean, he's one where, like, he was a really important player in franchise history, but he doesn't seem like he's the iconic player in franchise history. I mean, I guess it's Isaiah is the guy who I first think of when I think of, you know, absolutely the, you know, the dynamic, you know, most important player on this team. Although I think that's might say more about Dumars just kind of personality wise, because, you know, his on-court value was incredible. You know, maybe not quite what Isaiah's was, but it was up there as well. It was obviously, he's a Hall of Famer, so you can definitely make the case of, in terms of impact, in terms of everything, that he might be the most important player in franchise history. But for me, like, he doesn't, you know, like, when you think of him, it's like, okay, maybe, but it's not like undisputed like some of the other guys who are kind of on this list.
David Robinson, our last of the 14s, David Robinson with the San Antonio Spurs, of course. He's a little bit interesting case, too, because you could maybe have added a few more years there. Gets drafted in 1984, but of course can't enter the NBA until 1989 because of his commitments to the Navy. But still gets 14 years there with the Spurs. Franchise leader in free throws, PR, win shares per 48, and box plus minus. So a lot of the advanced stats kind of lean towards David Robinson, where a lot of the, obviously, counting stats go towards Tim Duncan, which, of course, you know, when he has six more years under his belt, five more years under his belt, you're obviously going to get that a little bit more with Duncan. But Robinson still makes his mark, and as we said earlier, and you said earlier, David Robinson really was the Spurs, and he felt like the face of the franchise until Tim Duncan came in there and kind of knocked the doors down and got them to even more success than they could maybe even ever imagine. But still, David Robinson does create, and he's still in some ways an ambassador for the Spurs as well, so I think he's definitely established himself, still is a part of that, even if he's not maybe the highest ranking one. We have Manu and Duncan over Robinson, but I think Robinson still holds a little bit of a cachet as well, because he was the first guy of the sort of the modern NBA era to get them to that next level, and a guy that people still remember a lot and remember him for being synonymous with the Spurs.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely second to Duncan, but there's nothing wrong with that. He's still a remarkable career, and absolutely, you know, had a, as I was about, you know, he's the more, you know, more kind of personable one, you know, where Duncan's kind of more withdrawn, where Robinson's more out there and, you know, being the ambassador for the team and for the league. So I think he stands out because of that as well.
Bill Russell, it's kind of interesting to see him here a little bit later because, of course, he did not have that long of a career. 13 years with the Celtics, drafted by the St. Louis Hawks in 1956, of course, immediately traded then. We've talked about that trade many, many times. Decent trade at the time for both teams, and worked out a little bit better for one team, but at the time, a justifiable trade. But, yeah, 13 years for Bill Russell on the Celtics. He leads the franchise in total rebounds, minutes per game, defensive win shares, and win shares. I mean, we've talked about Russell a lot. I don't know if there's anything more we have to talk about Bill Russell, but if you have anything, feel free. But if not, I'll move on to our next guy.
Yeah, I think we've said enough about Bill Russell on this podcast that I'll... Bill Russell was great.
Yes.
There you go.
WrestleMania. So, listen to our WrestleMania series.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So, yeah. So, we have Bob Cousy listed here, but Bob Cousy played seven games for the Royals, so I feel like he should not actually...
Yeah, okay, I was wondering, should we take... I wanted to, like, ignore that he played for the Royals, but I guess we should. You know, because it was kind of a sham, well, but I guess we should take Bob Cousy out. You're right.
Right. Yeah. Regardless, it counts. So
yeah,
I feel
you're
like,
right. You're right. You're right. It counts. Yeah. So Bob Cousy, yeah, you're gone. See you later, buddy.
Yeah.
Now we move on to Satch Sanders, who played for the Celtics for 13 years from 1960 to 1973, and leads the franchise in absolutely nothing because he was Satch Sanders, who had a good career, but obviously he's Satch Sanders. He's not going to be leading the team in anything because
Right.
Which is fine.
Yeah, he was perfect for what he did. He was a great defensive forward. He, really great guy from all accounts, and it was important to the team. But yeah, it was he was more along the lines of I think he was more impactful on the court, but he was more along the lines of your Nick Collisons and your Dennis Haslams. Like he was there. He was important. He was great in his role. But yeah, he was not a star. Although people say when he played, he had the talent that he could have been a star, but you know he just fit into all of the Celtics and fit in that role. They didn't need him to be that way, and that just worked out that way. So,
all right, so we're going to kind of go a little bit quicker for some of these other guys as well, so we can get to some of the interesting stories of these. But Wes Unseld, obviously with the Bullets franchise for 13 years. Calvin Murphy with the Houston Rockets, the San Diego / Houston Rockets for 13 years as well. Fred Brown with the Seattle Supersonics for 13 years. Alvin Adams with the Phoenix Suns. For 13 years. I want to bring him up real quick because he is the franchise leader in games, minutes played, offensive rebounds, total rebounds, steals, and defensive win shares. And I wonder, you know, Alvin Adams is a guy that maybe I don't appreciate quite as much, but I think, does it reflect poorly on Phoenix that he's as high in those, or is that more of a credit to Alvin Adams? So I'm not trying to demean Alvin Adams at all. I just think it's kind of surprising. I did not expect him to be so high on all those leaderboards for Phoenix, because Phoenix has had great players as well, but maybe just guys who haven't hung around for nearly that much. So does him being at the top of those lists more reflect on Phoenix, or does it reflect on him, you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think Adams was really, really good, excellent player. But I think it's partly because Phoenix just, some of their great players did not have the, had like 6 to 8, 10-year runs as opposed to 13-year runs. I mean, Nash or Charles Barkley or guys like that, even Paul Westphal, didn't have the super longest run for that team. Even Kevin Johnson was, I think, 9, 10 years or so. So, I think it's just kind of more circumstance than anything. But, Adams is another guy who's definitely really fun to watch, really great, kind of all do everything type player, good passing big man, all that kind of stuff. We talked about him a little bit before here and there, but he's a fun guy to watch for sure.
Yeah, he's a guy that I'm definitely after doing this episode and after doing some research, I want to check out a little bit more of, just because I guess I did not realize how, important he was that franchise. So definitely going to check him out a little bit more. I'll move on to the next guy, 13 years for Larry Bird. Now, Larry Bird, of course, I have to tell you about his Celtics career. You know about that. But I think the fun thing about Larry Bird is that the long rumored trade to Indiana in 1988, and this has been, I think, corroborated by Red Auerbach, and he has mentioned it many times before as well. I don't know if they were ever actually going to do this deal or whatnot. It's very weird. But in 1988, the Indiana Pacers offered Chuck Person, Herb Williams, and Steve Stepanovich for Larry Bird. So what that would have just been really weird to have Larry Bird on the 88, Indiana Pacers. And it's a weird trade, too, because Chuck Person, Herb Williams, and Steve Stepanovich, I mean, guys that were solid, and Chuck Person would obviously have a pretty solid career. But, yeah, you wonder, what would have happened, because Bird still had some solid years in him in Indiana. It would have been fascinating to see that team sort of maybe emerge in the final few years of Bird.
Yeah, that would have really been interesting. It's hard to even imagine it because, the Celtics were still a very competitive, very good team from 89, on, but they were no longer championship contenders. So it wouldn't have necessarily shifted anything, who went to the finals or what have you. I mean, I kind of doubt that Bird would have been enough. I don't think the Pacers were really set to, go over the top or anything. I mean, I guess Bird and Reggie being on the same team would have been, it's just sort of an interesting thought exercise. But, I don't think they had enough to really be, a deep playoff team with Bird. Bird probably would have been, better off with the Celtics in terms of staying competitive. But I mean, in one sense, it wouldn't have changed a lot. In one sense, it would have changed everything.
So. Yeah, for sure. Next guy, Magic Johnson, also 13 years, so exactly the same amount as as Larry Bird. Of course, we're adding that 1986 season as well, where he comes back out of retirement, so that definitely helps Magic. As far as him, of course, he's synonymous with the Lakers now and forever. But there was a time, and we have an entire episode about this as well, so we definitely recommend you check this out. I believe it is just called When Magic Johnson Requested a Trade. Magic Johnson requested a trade. Wanted to get out of L.A., was sick of a lot of the stuff going on there. We go into details on that episode, so definitely want to check that out if you get a chance. But yeah, almost moved on and almost went somewhere else, which just seems weird because he's just so synonymous with that franchise now. But yeah, there's a real possibility that a few years into his career, he's out and he's on another team and with another franchise.
Yeah, and that's a weird thing to think about for sure.
All right, so we have Kevin McHale. He had 13 years as well with the Boston Celtics. Real quickly, he was also the same year that Bird deal was floated around. Apparently, Red was trying to get Kevin McHale to Dallas. The rumored deal was Kevin McHale going to the Dallas Mavericks for Detlef Schrempf and Sam Perkins, which is a hell of a haul. You know, I mean, those are two guys that would end up having, I mean, maybe not, you know, obviously for the Mavericks, but end up having some pretty prolonged careers. And those guys would, you know, sort of pop up again on the Pacers many, many years later. But yeah, Kevin McHale going to the Dallas Mavericks just seems weird and icky in 1988. And he was, you know, really kind of at the end of his rope for the most part at that time. But still, it would have been fascinating to see that. More than anything, just to see Detlef Schrempf and Sam Perkins on the Celtics, because that would have been really cool. That would have maybe, you know, had they kept Bird and acquired those two guys, that almost would have worked. Like, so if there was any of those two deals, like, I almost would take that one. And obviously, Kevin McHale played an important role. But, I mean, you had Bird and what was left of Bird to Okoro when you had Detlef Schrempf and Sam Perkins and those sort of guys. That would have been really fun to see. But, alas, did not happen.
Yeah, McHale with a lot of injuries toward the end, too. I mean, he was hobbled by that after the broken ankle in 87 and playing on that. So, yeah, that one I could see shifting the Celtics up a little bit, you know, whether they could have actually beaten the Pistons or especially the Bulls, that's an interesting question. But yeah, that I can see maybe shifting some, you know, competitive, shifting some series and, you know, making the Celtics more competitive deeper into the playoffs.
Definitely. Isaiah Thomas, Detroit Pistons, 13 years there. Of course, we could not go this episode without talking about Jeff Foster, Indiana Pacers legend. As well, you know, there's Brad Miller, who we mentioned earlier. There's also Jeff Foster, Indiana Pacers legend. 13 years for Jeff Foster in Indiana. He's the franchise leader in offensive rebound percentage and also being an annoying dickhead. He definitely led the league many, many years in being an annoying dickhead, Jeff Foster. But Jeff Foster, 13 years in Indiana, you could have put a gun to my head and asked me how many years did Jeff Foster play in Indiana, and I would have never got anywhere near 13. I would have said like 6. I cannot believe he was there from 1999 until 2012. Think of all that Jeff Foster saw, all the different eras of Indiana Pacers basketball that Jeff Foster lived through. It's just,
yeah, I mean, there's the Reggie Miller era, there's the Jermaine O'Neal era,
his second year, then he has the Malice in the Palace, he's got the emerging of Jermaine O'Neal, he has the
Danny Granger era.
Yeah, the Danny Granger era. And then, like, the Roy Hibbert, Paul George era. Like, my God. Yeah. And all the constant in all of it is Jeff Foster for some reason.
There you go. I would never have expected this, talking about Jeff Foster here so much. But, yeah, it's
God, there was that team where it was him and Hansbrough, and oh God, I hated that team so much. You know the team.
Mike Dunleavy was in that team, right?
Oh my God, yeah. When Mike Dunleavy is like your fourth most annoying guy on your team, you've really assembled quite the unit there. But that was the Indiana Pacers. But run through these other guys here a little bit. Sam Jones for the Boston Celtics, he has 12 years. Michael Cooper, 12 years. Neither of these guys are franchise leaders in any respect. For the most part, we're kind of done with a lot of the franchise leaders. Well, there's some other guys that'll pop up, but we're starting to just kind of get guys that hung around for a while. Good players, of course. We're talking about, you know, Michael Cooper and a James Worthy and a Sam Jones, guys that were decent role players, but just not, you know, franchise bests in any ways. Nate McMillan of the Seattle Supersonics for 12 years. As well, Rick Smits, 12 years on the Indiana Pacers. We mentioned this guy as well. Active player Mike Conley, 11 years on the Memphis Grizzlies. And given the money that he's getting paid, I don't think he has any reason to leave right away. But I cannot imagine that Michael Conley gets to like 20 years with the Grizzlies. But who knows? Maybe.
It's hard to imagine. 15 seems like, it seems kind of reasonable. But 20 years, I mean, that's obviously only a handful of guys have gotten to that stage. So,
and his body's already, I mean, you're already starting to see a lot of injuries from him too. So it's like, that's the other part too. Is like, you have to last this long. You have to last with your franchise. Your franchise needs to want you. And then you also have to just be healthy enough to play as well, which is just not easy to do for a lot of guys.
Exactly.
Bob Pettit, Milwaukee and St. Louis Hawks, of course, 11 years there, ends his career pretty early, still kind of arguably in the peak of his career, but ends there with 11. Jack Twyman with the Rochester Cincinnati Royals for 11 years. Al Addles, 11 years with the San Francisco Philadelphia Warriors. Rudy Tomjanovich, 11 years with the San Diego Houston Rockets. And then Julius Erving, which is pretty interesting as well. So he, of course, does 11 years with the Philadelphia 76ers. There's a bunch of weird stuff there where, of course, he was drafted by the Bucks and he went to the ABA. So whatever you want to call it. But as far as with one NBA franchise, we're just counting the NBA, not the merger, he's 11 years there. But what was interesting is I did find this as well. June 21st, 1984, there was a blockbuster deal rumor that would have brought Julius Erving to the Clippers. It fell through when he denied the trade. He refused to leave Philadelphia. Reporters say that, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing because, you know, the report is that the 76ers said that Irving could turn the deal down, but then general manager Pat Williams of the Philadelphia said there was, you know, no way we were going to trade him. So just kind of interesting how it was going to be. But the deal, according to the San Diego Union and the San Diego Tribune, would have sent Irving, the 76ers' first-round draft choice, which is Leon Wood, and future considerations to the Clippers in exchange for Terry Cummings and $1.5 million. So I don't know. That's I don't know if in 1984 that'd be a good haul for Julius. But again, like, he didn't, I guess that was kind of the end of his peak, you know, because he'd be out by 1984. But yeah, interesting there to see Julius Irving was a Clipper. That would have been very, very depressing. I would have not liked that.
Yeah, no, that would have, karmically, that would not have been good. That would just would have been bad for everybody. So I'm glad it didn't happen. Yeah, basketball-wise, I mean, the Sixers were still good for a couple more years. And, you know, 86, they were actually really good. Just the Celtics were better. So, yeah, I don't know how much that would have changed in terms of history, but just in terms of, yeah, we don't want her to be.
That's icky. No, I don't want Donald Sterling ruining anything about Julius Irving. No, even though this was dad Julius Irving at this point, still.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. No. Still, we don't need that.
Yeah, we do not need that. So, Mark Eaton, 11 years with Utah Jazz. Vern Mikkelson, 10 years with the Minneapolis Lakers. Paul Arizin, 10 years with the Golden State Warriors. Al Bianchi, 10 years with the Syracuse Nationals, Philadelphia 76ers. Cliff Hagan, 10 years with the St. Louis Hawks. Willis Reed, only 10 years with the New York Knicks. Of course, injuries kind of caught up to him a little bit there. Bill Bradley, 10 years with the New York Knicks. Unfortunately, Tom Boerwinkel had 10 years with the Chicago Bulls.
Nobody wants to. He's a good passing, man. Yeah.
Alan Lavelle, 10 years with the Houston Rockets. Daryl Griffith, 10 years with the Utah Jazz. Bobby Wanzer, 10 years with the Rochester Royals. Dan Issel, 10 years with the Denver Nuggets. Russell Westbrook, I think this is interesting too. Our last two guys, still active players. Russell Westbrook entering his 10th year with the Oklahoma City Thunder. And then 10 years for Marc Gasol in Memphis. I don't think the Marc Gasol thing is going to last all that much. I don't know about the Westbrook thing. He might be a guy that just becomes like a franchise legend where he just kind of hangs around forever. It'll be interesting to see how that ends up playing out.
Yeah, and actually, I believe those guys are both entering their 11th year.
Oh, sorry, so, that's correct. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I believe Collins is entering his 12th year. So worth noting slightly.
Yeah, so getting a little bit closer there. All right, and now we're going to get quickly into notable tenures with one team, even though they didn't play with a franchise. So notable tenures, this is players that had a long career with a team, but then didn't play their entire career with that franchise. So they ruined it by getting traded or looking for better opportunities, those selfish people. But we'll run through these guys pretty quickly because we don't necessarily need to break down all the stuff about that. But you have Dominique Wilkins. He spent 12 years in Atlanta before being traded to the Clippers. Then, of course, he would bounce around after that. He would go to the Celtics, the Spurs, the Magic, and a bunch of other places that we don't need to remember because Dominique Wilkins is an Atlanta Hawk. That's all we'll ever remember.
Right. Sure. Yeah, the Clippers, unfortunately, they were not able to ruin Julius Irving, but they were able to.
Dominique from us.
That's very sad. They did. Yes.
Blood-sucking leeches there. Robert Parrish, 14 years with the Celtics, but of course started with the Golden State Warriors and then would move on to the Bulls and the Hornets and a few other teams as well. Or, no, that was it, right? Just the Bulls and the Hornets?
Yep, this was four.
Paul Pierce, 15 years with the Celtics. Could have been, but then he gets traded for Kevin Garnett and a bunch of other guys and all that sort of stuff. The Boston Celtics trade to the Brooklyn Nets, which we're still dealing with today. But then, of course, he goes to the Wizards. He goes to the Clippers as he rounds out his career. So 15 years with the Celtics, so pretty good, but not quite there. I don't know how we count Michael Jordan. 13 years with the Bulls, kind of. I don't know how we leave when a guy leaves and comes back. I mean, he didn't play for another NBA franchise, so I guess we should count the other years. But, you know, either way, 13 years with the Bulls.
Yeah, when we did it for Magic when he came back. Yeah. So I feel like that's fair to do it for Jordan.
Yeah, and then apparently I was looking at Basketball Reference, and they say that Michael Jordan played for the Wizards, but I don't remember that. So I'm just going to – that didn't happen, so – the Wizard, he didn't play for the Washington Wizards. There's no way that Michael Jordan was played for the Washington Wizards, so we'll just move on.
Yeah, Washington Bullets, maybe. Yeah,
maybe.
He played for the Bulls, not the Bullets.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's where you get mixed up. Yeah, but there's no way he played for the Wizards, so I don't know. Basketball Reference. I'll add them and let them know that they've made some great mistake by putting Michael Jordan in some weird, like, he retired and then came back like 3 years later to play for the Wizards. Come on, get out of here. That didn't
happen. Yeah. I mean, some people try to tell me that there was a franchise called the Bobcats.
It's ridiculous. That site's got a lot of errors. They run Hockey Reference and Football Reference and college football. I mean, things get crossed.
They get wires mixed up. Get crossed. Yeah, yeah, sure.
Things happen.
I get it.
It's understandable. It's okay. Yeah, Bobcats. Come on.
Yeah, but I know. Who would Dave have seen the Bobcats? I mean, it's seriously. So dumb, what's the most ridiculous thing you could ever possibly imagine?
Brad Davis, he has 12 years with the Mavericks. He was interesting, though, because he was drafted by the Lakers. And then went to the Pacers, the Jazz, and a few other teams before kind of settling with the Mavericks and having a really good career. And then he stuck with the Mavericks, of course, for the last 12 years of his career, but yeah, bounced around a little bit before that. Alex English has 11 years on the Nuggets. Bill Laimbeer, 13 years with Detroit. Kind of interesting here because I don't know if I necessarily 100% remember this, but he was on the Cavaliers for a while, too. Traded in 1982 from the Cavaliers to the Detroit Pistons. I feel like a lot of people probably don't know that. He's so synonymous with Detroit that it's hard to believe that he was a Cavalier.
He certainly was a Cavalier. Yes. Yeah, very early in his career. Yeah, they traded. It was just a year or two after he was drafted. So, yeah, it was one of many dumb moves by the Cavs in the early 80s. Yeah. Not the best run team.
No, yeah. definitely no. Not. Yeah, when you have a rule named after your incompetent general manager, it's pretty...
Right.
Things are going to work.
Incompetent owner. Incompetent and racist owner.
Yes, right? Yes, that too.
Yes, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Hakeem Olajuwon, apparently also Basketball Reference made an error and said that he played with the Raptors, but I also do not believe that. But yeah, of course, 17 years with the Rockets would have been high on that list, we mentioned before, but then has his 1 year with the Raptors. So, wow. Chris Mullin, 12 years to start his career with Golden State. Then he would have one more at the end of his career for 13 total, but of course had a stop in Indiana along the way as well. Derek Fisher, this is kind of weird too because he had 13 overall seasons with the Lakers but in two different tenures, so I don't know how we classify that. I guess we can classify it the same way we classify all those, in terms of how we classify him. But Derek Fisher obviously has 13 overall seasons with the Lakers but moves it up with a few different, he's with the Jazz for a few years, yeah, with the Mavericks and
Warriors.
And the Warriors, yeah, and all those.
He really bounced around toward the end there, yeah. So yeah, I would not have expected that it would have added up to 13 years.
It seems like a lot. Yeah,
to have. Yeah,
yeah, right. It definitely does seem like a lot for Derek Fisher. So I was kind of caught by surprise by that as well. Just didn't quite seen that. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, of course, has 14 seasons in LA, his longest tenure, but of course is also a Milwaukee Buck. You have heard of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. We don't have to talk about any more about him. Yeah. I don't think so. Good player, Kareem. Dwayne Wade.
Very good, yeah.
13 consecutive years in Miami. Added one more last year and then had some unfortunate runs in Chicago and Cleveland. So that...
I think at some point in the future, I'm going to forget that he was a Cavalier and be like, oh, yeah, he played for the Cavs. That's right. Yeah. That's going to happen like in 5 years.
The 5-10 year, yeah, like the retrospective of Dwayne Wade played for the Cavs. You won't believe it. Blow your mind that a Dwayne Wade with hair played for the Cavaliers. It's just like impossible to.
We'll probably make the joke about how it didn't really happen.
Right, exactly. Mercifully, for some godforsaken reason, still doing this podcast, even though we're making millions from it at that point, so it's obviously why we're doing it, but
yeah,
we'll be talking and making that exact same joke, so mark it on your calendars, folks. In 2028, mark it on your calendars, we will be making that joke at this time in 10 years. But Kevin Garnett, 12 years with the Timberwolves, came back for a year and a half the last 2 years of his career, but of course goes to the Celtics and the Brooklyn Nets as well, so doesn't all go with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Patrick Ewing, 15 years with the Knicks. And then, of course, he played for the Sonics and the Magic, but there's no evidence of that, so we're just not going to believe that that happened either. So, yeah, the Magic years, I'd like to just forget. Well, no, because he played in the, they had, those horrendous red uniforms at that time, the Supersonics. Ugh.
Oh, yeah.
I hated seeing really depressed, fat Patrick Ewing just sitting there with the red unis of the Seattle Supersonics, just lame. But 15 years for him in Knicks blue, but then he, of course, bounces around a few places. Mo Cheeks, 11 years with Philly. Eventually in 1989, he is traded to the San Antonio Spurs, goes to the Spurs, then goes to the Knicks, then from the Knicks to the Hawks, and then also plays with the Nets as well. So he kind of rounds out his career, kind of bouncing around, but has that 11 solid years in Philly to start off his career. For him, Clyde Drexler, 12 years in Portland, of course, before he goes to Houston and rounds out his career. Jerome Kersey, 11 years with Portland before becoming a journeyman, and a real big journeyman, too. Like, goes to the Raptors in the expansion draft, then the Warriors, then the Lakers, then the Sonics, then the Spurs, then the Bucks, and just a lot of places for unfortunate Jerome Kersey. Sam Lacy, I believe this is the first time I think we've ever mentioned Sam Lacy on the show. Maybe you can remember a time that we did as well, but 12 seasons with the Kings franchise. Interestingly enough, in three different spots. He starts out in Cincinnati, of course, follows them to Kansas City, Omaha, and then just Kansas City proper, and then missed Sacramento by about four or so seasons. So if he had just hung around for four more seasons with that franchise, he would have been in Cincy, Kansas City, Omaha, Kansas City proper, and Sacramento, which would have been quite the accomplishment for Sam Lacy, but unfortunately... 4 years off for him. So
he'll have to just accept being one of the best players in franchise.
Right, so. Which is, when you're in Jason Thompson territory with that damn franchise.
Oh, well, They have all those 50s and Oscar.
Yeah, I know, they do have Oscar. Yeah, you're right. You should give them the credit. But they also Jason Thompson.
There you go. Yeah. No, we've mentioned Sam Lacy before.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
For the record, yes, we have mentioned him. Not maybe we could mention him more. We probably need to delve in a little bit more. He's an interesting player. Another good passing big man.
Tony Parker, 17 years with the Spurs. I really just hope that like something goes wrong and he just never plays with the Hornets. I don't. Nothing wrong for him. I just maybe the Hornets are just like, you know what, sir, here, take $20 million sit on a beach and drink wine. Like that's much more enjoyable to you. Because they're already tweeting out pictures of Tony Parker in a Hornets uniform and it's icky and I don't like it. And it just would have been great. 17 years with the Spurs would have put him very high on that list that we had talked about before and would have given the Spurs a ton of more players than this. But Tony Parker has to go ruin it by playing with the damn Hornets. So I get it. I understand. But, you know, it is what it is.
So is Tony Parker historically the greatest player to ever be a Hornet?
Oh, wow.
Because really probably the only two players that I can think of that would compete with it would be Alonzo Mourning and R.R. Parrish.
Right. Oh, yeah, of course. You got Zoe. Yeah, so I think, it is between those three. I'm kind of zoning in on Alonzo Mourning and Tony Parker. I think Alonzo Mourning is probably a more dominant player, but I think Tony Parker probably had more... who was greater all time between Alonzo and Tony Parker? That's tough because you would seem like... I think most people would just kind of say Alonzo, but I think that does a great disservice to Tony Parker, who was fucking awesome for quite a few years. So that's a really good question there.
Right. I mean, Alonzo was a legit MVP candidate for a couple years.
But
obviously his career was cut short, you know, so if you talk about overall contributions, that's kind of getting into hazy territory on longevity versus, you know, peak impact. But I don't know. It just occurred to me when he signed there, I'm like, I wonder, you know, who you would say on those lists. I might put Parrish over Parker too. I mean, Parrish was a top 15 player. So I don't know. It is one of those three guys. Perhaps listeners can share, you know, their thoughts on the matter as well. Tweet us at Over and Back NBA or our Facebook group as well. Either way, we'd love to hear your input on it.
Yeah,
or anything else you want to talk
about. I don't know if I can come up with it. That's a really tough question there because I love Zoe. And like you said, he was a dominant player for quite a few years, but Tony's just got the longevity. I don't know. That's really fascinating there. Yeah, I'm interested in what you guys say to that. Definitely answer that question for us because I cannot come up with a decision. So maybe our fine folks can settle the debate for us. Two more guys here. We got George Gervin, 12 seasons with the franchise. But of course, in 1985, is traded by the Spurs to the Chicago Bulls. And then plays out the strings of his career with the Chicago Bulls. But 12 years with George Gervin and the Spurs, I, again, really wish he had not gone to the Bulls because that would be awesome to have Gervin at 12, Parker at 17, Ginobili where he was, Duncan where he was, Robinson where he was. It's just like the Spurs. Because all the other franchises we talk about are these, like, what I would really consider the legacy franchises in the NBA, the Lakers, the Celtics, the 76ers, guys like those. And then to have, you know, the Spurs be as – and they are – I mean, the Spurs are, you know, and it might take a few years until we kind of realize it. They are a legacy franchise in the NBA. I mean, they've been really good for a lot of years. We've talked about it before. The 50 win streak is incredible. The playoff streak is incredible. The stuff they've had, and they've been good almost from the moment they joined the NBA, and shit, even in the ABA as well. So they're maybe not at that point quite yet, but they probably should be. But it's just interesting to see them almost dominate that list in terms of guys just hanging around there. And you would never think San Antonio would be this place where people just end up spending almost their entire careers with, but they do. And it's not just a recent thing too. George Gervin kind of sets the standard there with 12 years with the franchise.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, the end not so good, you know, going to the Bulls and things not going great there. And there being some issues there, but I think all was forgiven after that. So obviously, yeah. And he a really fun player to watch, too. And really like his peak, you know, he was like a All-NBA first team guy, like 4 years in a row or 4 out of 5 years or whatever. I mean, he was really, you know, he was the best shooting guard in the game for, you know, a significant amount of time. And you know, the era that he got stuck in isn't as fondly remembered as some other eras, but he was absolutely, you know, super important player and obviously important in Spurs history.
Yeah, absolutely. And then our final guy here, Karl Malone, who went and ruined it. He had 18 seasons in Utah, established quite the career, and then has 1 year with the Lakers. Womp womp. So he just would have been high on the list, but
didn't get it. Well, he's high on this list, I guess.
He's high on this list. He wanted the rings. Yeah. I get it. You know, things happen. They almost got there. Then things didn't happen, and then he was gone.
Exactly. So we'll close on this question. Where does Karl Malone rank among all-time great players who have played for the Lakers? Since he hasn't played.
Yeah, you're right. It just seems so weird to have this question and phrase it in Karl Malone territory. But, I mean, Karl Malone is one of the best to ever play. I mean, I'd put him below Kareem.
Okay.
I'd put him probably below a Magic.
Right,
I'm going to get a lot of shit, but I'd have him in the conversation with a Kobe. I know Kobe stans are feverishly typing, but I think Karl Malone's a pretty fucking great all-time player. I would say somewhere in that Kobe range. I think he's probably a little bit above Jerry West, even though Jerry West had an incredible career. I think he's a little bit above Elgin Baylor. I don't know where to put with the George Mikan just because it was almost a completely different era. For basketball.
What about Shaq?
Oh, fuck, they had Shaq too. God damn it. I forgot about Shaq.
And Wilt.
Oh, Wilt. Okay, never mind. Okay, all right. This's not fair. How did the Lakers get this many good players? They should have LeBron now too. What the fuck? No. They're not allowed to do that. They can't have these many good players. They need to share the wealth. Shit. I forgot about LeBron. LeBron's in the Lakers, Jason. Did you remember that?
I do remember that. Yeah, I heard that. It did happen.
God,
yeah,
he's got to be fifth then, right? Like around fifth, sixth, which sucks because it's Karl Malone. Like he's, you know.
Right.
Man, he's like a top 20 player. So, but yeah, it's.
Yeah. I mean, he's behind Kareem. He's
for sure.
Behind LeBron. Yes. I would say he's behind Magic.
Yeah.
Behind Shaq. Mm-hmm. Behind Wilt.
I would put him behind Wilt. Yeah. And I think that's where I would then comfortably put him.
So that would be sixth.
But then there's arguments to be made. Then there's, you know, Kobe arguments, Kobe. Jerry West and arguments. West. And yeah.
Yeah. Maybe even Baylor, you know. Yeah, that's tough.
God, that's man, that's not fair. Lakers, no, that's not fair.
Yeah.
You got to give some of those guys. You're not allowed to have LeBron. You got to trade LeBron. You can't have him. Yeah.
Somebody else who you have to think about? Steve Nash.
Oh, right.
Probably not as good as Karl Malone, but he's like, you know.
What about Dwight Howard? Like, you know what I mean? Like, we always got to laugh about Dwight Howard, but
yeah,
like Dwight's a weird one. Like, right now he's a laughing stock, but I mean, Dwight Howard's fucking great. Like, he's really good. He's the 10th best Laker of all time. Like, you know, like.
Yeah, maybe 15th, but yes.
right.
But still, right. It's crazy. Yeah, he's a guy who was the MVP candidate, you know, so.
Stupid Lakers.
Anyway.
Stupid
Lakers. It's, anyway, so that's some fun thoughts there.
What an experiment there. That'll be our next fun episode to do is best Laker player of all time. All we do is just upset Kobe player Kobe stands by putting him like far below these guys. But it's like come on, nice.
I would put Kobe maybe one ahead of Karl, but I mean it's like right like you know it's very very
yeah
close.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I would, no I could hear arguments both ways. Like I probably prefer Malone, but if you told me you had Kobe above him, I wouldn't argue with you. That much sure. I probably would prefer Malone a little bit, but yeah, that's tough.
It's super close. Yeah, exactly. So,
man,
all right. Well, hopefully, I gave everyone some food for thought. Feel free to tweet us your all-time greatest Lakers or any other team for that matter. You know, in the spirit of all-time greatest player to play for that franchise, because that would be more interesting than you know the other way. But nevertheless, you can find us. You can find us at the Step Back at fansided.com. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook at Over and Back NBA. Feel free to share anything you want with us. Leave us a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcast. We're probably there, and we'd appreciate your feedback. So thanks for listening, and back again soon.